named Holly. Can you hear me? All right, I'll speak up. I have Gatorade and tissue and literature. Thank you, Kenny, and I love you, and wherever you went, kisses and love. There you are. And I love you, too. And, okay, next it says breathe. And the reason I have notes tonight is because my brain is fried, and largely I need help. And I'm not ashamed of that today. I've been vacillating between wanting to throw up and being really excited and elated, but I haven't puked, so I think I'm doing good. And, let's see. I am grateful to the programming committee, everyone on it, for finding my process and recovery suitable enough to share with all of you. Every time that we share in an NA meeting or at a convention or anything, we have the chance to either save somebody or help somebody, even if it's just ourselves. Okay. Can y'all turn that up some? Anyone? Anyone? Because I'm on the mic. Alright. Y'all keep saying it if you can't hear me, and I'll keep telling them to turn it up. As Kenny said, my home group is called Free to Live. It's in Sterling, Virginia on Monday nights from 7:30 to 8:45. We're a beginner's meeting. And we take our beginner's status very seriously, always checking to make sure we're delivering the message the way we're supposed to. We do practice the traditions in our home group as best we can. And we are in the Dulles Corridor area of Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to say that, and just for today, it says that everything we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth. And so what I'm sharing with you tonight is the truth as I know it today. Not as I knew it years ago, not as I'll know it tomorrow or years from now, but what I know today. And so hopefully I'll continue to grow. I don't quote literature because I'm not good at remembering stuff. So I make sure that I read it from the book because I'm very emotional. And when I read stuff and I try to tell you what it said, I never read the black part. I tell you how I feel, and it comes out wrong. So I do read literature. And if anyone's ever heard me share or you're in my intimate circle, you know I go to the literature all the time because I can't rely on my brain. It's a very unsafe place for me. And what I've learned about this process is I can work the steps over and over and over and over again. But if there is no application of spiritual principles after each and every step that I work, all I've done is gained a whole bunch of knowledge, and I know a whole bunch of shit about myself, and I've done nothing. And so what I know is that if each step that comes down the road for me, if it's me working with somebody or someone working with me, and they say, this is how you can apply the spiritual principles of this step in your life today, if that sentence is not said to me after each and every step, then I've missed the point. I need application of spiritual principles to keep myself in line. I'm a dirty, greasy, violent person by nature. And it is my job while I'm here to go against that nature. And the only way I can do it is to apply spiritual principles in my life. Why I'm here and why I stay here is to find freedom. It says it in our symbol, and the only freedom I need today is the freedom of this space right here. And I know that our program works because I know women that are in prison for life, and they're free. They're in prison for life, and they're free. There's no reason why we are free and can't be free. And I believe in that. The man who made our symbol was on his deathbed before I was even born, coming up with the idea of all that we do to achieve freedom around here. It's not just a symbol. It's a way of life. It's not just a little pretty picture at the beginning of our book. It says that we're here to achieve freedom, freedom from ourselves. I don't need to be free from you today. You can't hold me back. The only thing I need to be free from is the lies that my head will tell me on a regular basis because of the experiences I've had in life. And that's my job. More will be revealed. It says the program of Narcotics Anonymous provides an opportunity for us to ease the pain of living through spiritual principles. It does not say through abstinence alone. And we have to take advantage of the opportunity. We have to take advantage of that opportunity. We not only have that right, it's our job. I mean, I really believe, I look at recovery like a job. I don't like have kids and a husband and a family and a house and all this, and I fit in A in. Right? I had an A and they all came later. And I make it work around that, because without being clean, I can't offer them anything anyways. And the reason I know that it's important to apply spiritual principles is because when I didn't, and I came around 6 years clean, I sat one night in my room all night long with a 9mm in my mouth with a bullet chamber. At 6 years clean. That's the difference between clean time and recovery. And I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but I highly recommend you work the steps when you get here. I don't recommend you wait. When I am sponsoring women and I'm with them, you know, I believe there are certain things that work better than others after being here for quite some time. And I try to pass that on to them, but I do know that when I'm working with certain people, everybody doesn't get it the same way. And I'm learning more about gray areas than black and white, and more about the middle than wrong and right, and more about, you know, how to look at a person as an individual and not shove recovery down your throat the way I got it. That's not always easy for me. When I got here, there was none of this love you to death stuff going on. There was none of these people, oh, you relapsed, honey, it's okay. It's not okay to relapse. I'm glad you came back. I'm gonna hug you and love you. But it's not okay that you relapsed. That's a spiritual assault on yourself. You know, and so I believe that, you know, maybe we've gotten a little frou-frou. I don't know. They were saying stuff like, shut your legs. Please do us a favor and get to a woman's meeting. My God, would you please put some clothes on? You know, whatever. It was terrible. I wasn't here to find a man. A sugar daddy, really. I should actually clear that up. I mean, you know, to me, you should address everything since the day before you got clean on your first round of steps, right? And then by the time you get done, you'll have plenty of stuff to look at. You know, of course, if you have a life-threatening, like, freedom-threatening behavior, we can address that right away, too. But, you know, I don't ever believe I should be with one sponsor forever. I would never want to close myself off to one person's idea of this process. Man, I've met people over the years that have changed everything I thought with one sentence. I would never want to close myself off to that. I don't believe God wants me to get the message from one person for the rest of my life. So I believe you work the steps with someone one or two times, three times, four times. Check your relationship. Are you incestuous mentally and spiritually and emotionally? Has it gotten sick? Is it time to move on? If it is, move on. We're not married here. You know what I'm saying? We ain't got to work on this forever. I'm here to get what you have, and when I get it, I need to move on and get what somebody else has. That's okay. It's not personal. It's about my personal recovery. And what I realized is that I'm a nerd. I'm an NA nerd that never went to, like, school, in high school. You know what I'm saying? Didn't even know I was smart until I went to college and got, like, almost a 4.0 GPA. Amazing. I thought I was stupid all my life. And the truth is, I'm a nerd. I wouldn't dream of going to a college class, showing up in front of my professor with no books, no pen, no note taken. That's insane to me. So there's a few nerds in my home group too, so I don't feel too alone. But I bring my literature to every meeting, because I've read that stuff 100 times, but it's still going to hit me a different way depending on how I feel. When I got here, they told you to read stuff 30 days in a row. Because you're going to feel differently every day. And so every day it's going to mean something different to you. So I believe, that's why I don't quote literature, first of all. Y'all get that? But the other thing is that I believe that I should personalize this process by making it my responsibility to keep learning no matter what I think I've achieved. Because we're not going to be done here until we're dead. And that's what I believe. Now, I do believe that one of my favorite sentences in the book, and I know everybody's like, I want to say that's your favorite sentence, but the truth is, this is my favorite sentence. And it works out in line. It says, as we do this, actually, more will be revealed. As we do this, and it's talking about the empathy we have for one another, it says, we will undergo a vital spiritual experience and are changed. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I need a vital spiritual experience on a regular basis. because I'm sick sometimes. And the truth is that I haven't outgrown the need for a sponsor, like one of my home group members saying, I haven't outgrown the need for literature, and I can call somebody who I'm sponsoring that has, you know, a year and a half clean, sobbing and crying, and say, I need a new perspective, will you help me? And that's what I had to do 48 hours ago. You know, I had to call somebody and say, I need a new perspective, can you help me? And I told her, you know, I told her one sentence, and she said, oh, I know what to say. But I said, no, I need to tell you the story. And after the story was over, she still said the same thing. You were wrong. You see what I'm saying? A person largely I consider a newcomer telling me I'm wrong. And I said, you're right. Thank you. You see what I'm saying? I don't know who's going to help me. If I don't stay open to it, I'm going to shoot myself in the foot. I'm not willing to be in pain anymore. Not for more than a few minutes at a time. And the other thing that I'm really strong about before I get into the steps is like personal daily maintenance. And no, I don't believe a meeting is personal daily maintenance. Okay, so I don't function well without a lot of maintenance, and all the women that I sponsor know that. So they're part of my daily maintenance. And so what happens is every day, like I wake up, and this might be too much information, but you'll get over it. I wake up and I say, I'm not allowed to pee until I read my meditation books. And so then I read my meditation books and I go potty and I give my oldest one off to school and then I hold my youngest one. I have to hold her every morning because she likes that. She's 2 and a half and she's nuts. So I hold her and then one sponsee calls on the way to work and then we get done and another sponsee calls on her way to work and then we get done and another woman calls on her way to work and we're done. And then the last one calls on her way to work and the last thing she says to me is whatever I ask her to say to me. If I say it's be gentle to my husband, she'll say, honey, don't forget to be gentle to your husband today. If it's don't forget to rest, she'll say, baby, don't forget to rest today. She's my last voice, so I ask her for what I need. I say, this month I need to be told to rest because I'm sick. Please remind me to rest. And that's what she'll tell me. And then I talk to somebody else around 9:30 a couple days a week, and that's my boy to introduce me. And we share about this process, this recovery process. And the women that call me, we talk about the meditation. And I talk to them as much about me as I hear from them about themselves. Today it is a two-way street. I don't have to be any more than I am today. If I'm feeling weak today, I'm going to tell you I'm feeling weak today. If I'm feeling like I don't have a program today, I'm going to tell you I don't feel like I have a program today. If I need your help today, I'm going to tell you I need your help today. I don't have any shame about that. The shame is acting like I'm more than I am when I'm not. And I don't do that today, most of the time. There's still those days where the ego jumps in. And the deal is that, you know, it was explained to me that I had daily maintenance when I was out there using it. First, I didn't understand that. But as I learned to look at my story with a more objective point of view, I realized my maintenance was really high out there. Because I have a sponsee struggling with why she needs so much maintenance right now. And I'm telling her, be happy you're here and you have a chance to have maintenance, right? But the reality is, if you have a story that's even similar to mine in any way, then you had a lot of daily maintenance to use. You know, I graduated at certain points in my recovery. At first, when I used to freebase, because that's what we called it back when I was using it, we didn't know the word crack, you know. So I was freebasing, right? And I had that set up in the closet with the little stool. And you could open the door just like that, and you could see out the crack, through the blind crack, and down the street. So when my old man was coming home, I could rush and put it all away before he got there so he wouldn't know that I was smoking up all his shit. But you know he knows I was smoking up all his shit because I was cutting it with isotol as much as I could. But then I graduated to the bathroom, right? Because I couldn't bathe on a regular basis. I thought if I just hung out in the bathroom, something might happen. Plus the toilet was closer. So I found myself thinking that it was a good time to sit on the potty backwards for like 2 weeks and not like brush my teeth, have a biscuit every third day, fall asleep on the hitter when it would burn my face, you know. But I would literally like sit there for 2 weeks without bathing and eating and drinking other than like beer and biscuits with butter and sour cream. Okay, that was a graduation. This is my daily maintenance. Then I hung, now I have a nice place, y'all. I have a drug dealer for, you know, a sugar daddy. Nice, you remember when the projector screen TV came out of the footstool thing in the 80s. You know what I'm talking about? So we had that, but see, I tacked comforters on all the windows, you know, so they couldn't see it, you know. I once met a woman I was working in this prison with, and she used to put a cover over the TV because she thought they could see it from the TV. I said, damn, I wasn't that bad, right? No, but let me tell y'all what I did next. I went to the fabric store one day. I finally got out during the daytime, and I bought huge amounts of black satin fabric, and I lined the floor with it. I took myself 50-50s, and I turned around, and I went, and I thought, at least when I get down there, there'll be something to pick up. That was my graduation, my daily maintenance. I remember one time I called the operator and said, is it 7 a.m. or 7 p.m.? And she said, damn. Now, here's the kicker. I live at the beach on the East Coast. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Largely, when you're using that information, leaves you even if you've lived there all your life. Okay. I'm the one that was in the grocery store, you know, the 24-hour store at 2 a.m. with like a case of Churro Boy, a case of El Productos, a case of Easy Riders, 10 cases of beer, a case of lighter fluid, you know. And that cashier just looked at me like, damn, good God, what are you doing? I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm picking this up for a friend. But when the HBO had the first crack special, and I was sitting there freebasing, and I was like, God, I feel sorry for them. Smoking crack. They don't have their teeth. They're all messed up. Skinny, homeless. Pass it to the old man. He passed it back. I mean, this is daily maintenance, people. This is daily maintenance. I one time left my house and walked out the front door, and there was almost a month's worth of papers and mail waiting for me because I had not left my home in a month. A month. Life was still going by, and I was maintaining my using on a daily basis, and life was passing me by. I'm talking about embezzling $7,000 one day at a time, daily maintenance. And then using that money to like run away to Florida and then fly back every 2 weeks and freebase in Norfolk because I promised myself I wouldn't do it in Florida. Just say we weren't too bright back then. Look, the kicker is this. The amount of drugs it took in between those 2 weeks periods to like keep me right to get to the next Norfolk trip was terrible. And the last trip to Norfolk was my 21st birthday, and you know, my older friend, not the sugar daddy because we couldn't call him that, but my older friend, he called me and said, come home for your birthday, baby. You're turning 21. I got the best present you've ever wanted. I said, he's going to give me a ring. You know, he's like 20 years older than me. And he ain't never married anyone. But he's going to give me a ring. And when I showed up, he had an ounce cooked up for me. My favorite hitter. And he said, I got to go in the shower. Don't kill yourself. I said, you got it, baby. And I tried to smoke a 16th in one hit. So after the ambulance came, and I'm not sure I was awake for any of this, I remember waking up in ICU with my chest going, I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I think at that point, I may have thought I might have a problem with freebasing. Don't you know when I got out of the hospital, I smoked every last bit of it up. So if you have a story, and it sounded any part of like that at any time, I think what you've experienced is daily maintenance to use. And I think what I need to do is take that old little saying they used to say here and say, if you put a tenth of the energy into recovery that you put into using, you'd have been recovered by now. So, on to the steps. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Spiritual principles, acceptance, honesty, surrender, open-mindedness, willingness, humility. The step working guide says our hope is to internalize the principles of step one, to deepen our surrender, to make the principles a fundamental part of who we are. That means indispensable. Can't leave it behind. Must have it inside. This tells me they need to be inside of me. I cannot live free without them. If I want to achieve ongoing freedom, I have to start as early as the first step with spiritual principles. And it works out why it says denial is the part of our disease and makes it difficult, if not impossible, for us to acknowledge reality. Honesty had to replace denial before we could face the truth of our addiction. Proving why I need women who I can share with. Proving why, even when it's a sponsee who's a newcomer, I can call and cry and say I need a new perspective and they can help me. The working guide says, if we've been clean a while, I love this, and our first step is about our powerlessness over some other behavior that's made our lives unmanageable. Now, listen, in case you didn't get this part. We need to find a way to stop the behavior so that our surrender isn't clouded by continued acting out. Yes, it actually said stop. Didn't say play around. Didn't say half do it. Didn't say I'm going to do it a little bit. I'm going to manage my way back down. I'm only going to do it a few times this week and then one time next week. Didn't say that. It said stop the behavior. All I know is if I can stop freebasing, I can stop anything. And I know that when I have those behaviors, that I need to look at my spiritual assaults. Do you hear me? The spiritual assaults on other people because of my behaviors, and the spiritual assaults on myself because of my behaviors. You know, some of the behaviors that I've seen kill people around here and that have been a part of my story either because I've personally practiced them or I've helped people who've practiced them would be stuff like sex. Not the healthy kind, not the normal kind, but the I did too many people that weak kind, right? To fill that void we talk about. How about smoking? Did that put your panties in a wad? Get over it. I'm an ex-smoker. I quit when I had 2 years clean because it was a spiritual block for me. Because I can't say, God, thank you. Wait a minute. How did my sponsee say it the other week? When I roll out of bed every morning, the first thing I say is, God, thank you for waking me up. Now let me put a cancer stick in my mouth. It's killing me. I'm dying. That's what she said to me the other week. It's killing me. I'm dying. I can't take the shame anymore. She's almost ready. I've been there. Only when I told my sponsor that, she said, keep smoking. You're not allowed to quit yet. So by the time I quit, I hated it. And I quit on my second anniversary. Thank God. For real. Shopping? I ain't talking about weekly grocery shopping. I'm talking about I'm going to go buy up everything in the everything at the mall shopping. Or that new car shopping when I don't need it shopping. Gossiping. Need I say more? Binging, purging, cutting. Any of those? You know, when you've been here for a long time and you still have secrets like that, they're not secrets. Everybody knows. You just think they don't know. Road raging? Please don't road rage with an NA sticker on the back of your car. I love Narcotics Anonymous. Gambling?
Well, we just play cards on Fridays. It's only $100 any.
Gambling? Stealing? Please do not steal and embezzle on your job with an NA t-shirt on so when they come and arrest your ass on the 6 o'clock news and you wear a 5X, I don't see it flashing all over the screen. Thank you. These are my personal resentments. Not really. Just experiences. How about anger? Resentment, rage, fantasy? I love fantasy. Boy, if I lived in that house, I'd be fine. When I always want to live in that house and I'll be fine, I'm not with God. I want to live in that house to be fine. I want that new car. Personally, I can tell you I've done all that and it doesn't work. Move on. How about abusing our kids, partners, anyone, emotionally, spiritually, physically? All that stuff. It doesn't say to play around with it. It says stop. If you don't know how, ask somebody. Make yourself accountable. That's what I do. The other week, I almost verbally assaulted my child because I was angry with her father. And when I got ready to say it, I had to stop myself and I said, baby, I'm gonna love you. I'm going in the closet. When I go in the closet in my house, that means you can't come in because that's my place to go get right. And I came back out and I loved her and I didn't take that frustration out on her because she doesn't deserve it. That's what I'm talking about, like doing big girl stuff. Stuff that's eluded me all my life until I got here and applied spiritual principles. You know, another thing is it says in how it works how and why. While abstinence is the beginning, our only hope for recovery is a profound emotional and spiritual change. That means if I stay here for like 10, 20, or 30 more years and I'm doing the same stuff I'm doing today, somebody hit me, please. That also means that, like, if I've been here for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and there's a line of victims behind my ass, recovery's eluded me to a great degree. That's what I believe. And it's good that I'm up here and I can give my opinion and not necessarily the opinion of Narcotics Anonymous. That's the difference between being clean and being clean and serene. I don't want to be clean. I want freedom. I want to be clean and serene. Look, our literature says, in recovery, we will be introduced to spiritual principles such as surrender, honesty, acceptance, required for the first step. Required means I have to do it. It's not negotiable. I don't get to pick that one and not that one because I don't feel like being really honest today. Blah, blah, blah. And it will transform our perceptions and the way that we live our lives. This means that I don't, whatever it is that I'm doing, let's say I'm a sexual predator. Okay? I'm a sexual predator. I regularly assault newcomers' spirit by screwing them. That's my thing. Let's say that's my thing, okay? I need to stop. That's what the literature says. It says, I need to stop. And if you've been here for a few decades and that's still your game, please start to recover. I like to say other things, but see, today I'm programmed to say different things. Spiritual principle things. We do not just say the words and the steps, we learn to live them. I do that by understanding and try to live within the concept and belief that I have absolutely no control over anyone, anytime, anywhere, any place, but me and my reactions to life. I can't control my 5.5-year-old. I definitely, and some of y'all know my 2.5-year-old, she is off the hook right now. I can't control any of that. The reason I know that when we do stuff like that spiritual assault on a newcomer with the whole baby, baby, I got you thing, I've been there. I mean, I lived it. Both ways. I slid on in here. Well, actually, I got dragged in here against my will, but that's another story. And what I realized is after about a couple of months, I need me a sugar daddy because, like, I don't like to work and you need to pay the bills. And I picked him out because he had a lot of clean time and he was cute and old, right? And he picked me too. Because, you know, I was like, well, I was stuck in the 80s, right? It was like 91, but I still had on that, like, polka-dotted skirt and the knee boots in the summertime. And so he was really cool, and he did the car thing and the, you know, house note thing and the paid me all the things and let me keep my paycheck and gave me extra money and all that stuff. But see, he had AIDS, too, and he didn't tell me. And he knew it. Lack of spiritual principles, maybe? But let me tell you something. I'm standing here umpteen years later and he's dead. Right? He assaulted me spiritually and he gave me AIDS. And when I was 6 years clean and I came back from another country and slid on into my network and there was this guy hanging out there that I'd known since I was a teenager, I did the same thing. See, I justified it because I'd known him half of my life. But he had 11 months clean. And we may not have screwed till he had a year clean, but let me tell you something. I spiritually assaulted him. And eventually he used. And he may have used months after we broke up. Eventually he used. And I don't know if he ever made it back. So I'm telling you from personal experience. I've had it happen to me, and I've done it to someone else. It's got to stop. Step two. First of all, if you wait until the third step to get a prayer, it might not work. I largely think it's smart to write a second step prayer first. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, spiritual principles, humility, open-mindedness, willingness, and acceptance, which becomes trust. Our basic text says some of us didn't take the step seriously at first. We've all heard this line. We passed over it with a minimum concern, only to find out the next steps would not work until we worked step two. It didn't say it might work. It said it would not work. And I believe that. Our working guide says as we stay clean and continue to work this step, we discover that no matter how long our addiction has gone on and how far our insanity has progressed, there is no limit to the ability of a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. I am the one who limits my higher power. He has no limits. He can restore me from anything. But with my rebellion and outright defiance at times, it's my fault that I don't get restored. Nobody else's. And I'm talking about, you know, in our workbook when it says no matter how painful the process of demolishing our denial may be, something else is being restored within us. We believe that we can be restored to sanity even in the most hopeless times, even in our sickest areas. I'm talking about from violence, from knowing that I've, like, it's hard for me to say these kind of things. My daughter's in kindergarten, my oldest daughter, right? And her teacher, we figured out we're both 12-step friendly, but, like, she won't tell me how. And she wants a copy of this tape. And she was just diagnosed with cancer, so she's not teaching anymore. She's at home. She wants me to come over for tea next week because I don't do coffee. And she wants me to bring a copy of this tape. I don't want to say things like violence. Like, I've done things like shove a crowbar through someone that pissed my brother off and, like, pushed it through double hard to make sure it came out the back and I saw the flap come up his jacket. Or that I held a gun to a woman's head and took her child from her in a kinder care parking lot because her old man owed my old man $2,000. Because I'm a mother now. Right? Or that I beat a girl in her face so bad once that she had reconstructive surgery on almost every bone in her face. Because she said something to my cousin's wife. That's what I'm capable of. You know, I'm talking about in our sickest areas. I'm talking about being beat all your life and turning that rage on other people. Because you don't know what to do with it. I'm talking about being violent and being a victim of violence. Being a child molester, being a victim of a child molester. Being a rapist, being a victim of a rapist. Sexual predators, spouse abusers, child abusers, murderers. I don't give a shit what it is you did. I don't even care anymore what I did to a great degree. I just want relief from it. Freedom. From this. There's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. We hear it in every meeting. This means refusal to apply spiritual principles. This can kill us not even spiritually, but sometimes physically. Or not only spiritually, but sometimes physically. I'm talking about when you absolutely 100% deny the practice of spiritual principles, you can die in here a million different ways. I believe that because I have. And I'm only blessed that I still get to try. The part of the second step that's hard for me, it says the need for our own sense of spirituality is too vital to our recovery for us to neglect this highly personal process. And I remember when I first got on my second step and my sponsor, you know, all my sisters were on their second step and they were all getting like 5-minute meditation. Thing. You gotta meditate for 5 minutes after you pray. You know, and I was still standing over there going, and she was like, you don't get it. Keep coming back. And I kept coming to her, and I would bring her my second step work, and she'd look at it and be like, oh my God. She was screaming at me, read the black part, you know. And I just couldn't get it, you know. And I was like, but I want a meditation too. She said, 2 minutes. And I was like, 2 minutes? She got 5. She was like, that's all you can handle. And I remember that I was real poor, and I had one of those flip things. It wasn't even digital yet, right? It was one of those flip things. And I remember trying to go 2 minutes. And I'm going to tell you something. I didn't see both minutes. I saw every second on both minutes. I didn't know how to calm my mind down. The idea of turning this off was so foreign to me. I mean, every night I went to bed with, you know, who do I want to do? What was on the news? Who do I want to do? How much money do I want to make? I had a bootleg t-shirt business, right? Largely stupid for a white girl, but anyways, I had a bootleg t-shirt business. And I would sit there at night saying, if I bought 400 t-shirts at such and such a price and put a such and such print on them and sold them for such and such, I could make a such and such. This is what my brain did every night. I couldn't slow my brain down for nothing in the world. And what I'm telling you is, it's a personal process to learn to quiet my mind. That's what some of the second step is about. If I cannot quiet my mind, not only can I not hear God, I can't hear you. Every time you speak, if I'm formulating an answer, I've cheated myself. If I can't slow down and hear somebody, which is very hard for me still today, I've cheated myself. And it works out in why. It says, our belief is now reinforced by our own personal experience, some of which is unexplainable. We sometimes encounter remarkable coincidences in our lives that have no rational explanation. We do not need to explain or to analyze these occurrences. We can simply accept that they happen and be grateful for them. Just for Today says, some of us have profound spiritual experience, dramatic and inspirational in nature. You know, you may think we're going to be stuck on the first 3 steps for a long time, but that's because we are, because it's the foundation. But let me tell you about some of my personal experiences that were like my burning bushes, as they say in the religious world. You know, when I got diagnosed with AIDS and I went through this process, you know, a young girl, I was the baby. I was a baby at the time. There was nobody in my community younger than me with AIDS, with full-blown AIDS, right? And this girl came, and she was 19, and she was like bedridden with AIDS already. She only did one boy one time. Doesn't that suck? Doesn't that suck? And let me tell you something. The day she died, and before it was all over with, she was at a Narcotics Anonymous convention standing up with 2 years clean. Standing without a cane with 2 years clean. But when she died, the morning that she died, she had told me I needed to get a purple Jeep. Now, some of y'all know me, I'm not really a purple girl. I really don't do those frou-frou colors at all. Barbie colors, I used to call them. I'm not that judgmental today. But she told me I needed to get a purple Jeep because she liked purple. And she couldn't drive, of course, so I needed a purple Jeep to drive her around. I said, I would be dead before I would be caught in a purple Jeep. So I went one morning and picked out my Jeep, and the next morning I went back to get it. It was February 1st, 1997, on a Saturday morning, and my mom drove me. And as we drove to get my red Jeep, and they don't even make purple Jeeps, right? I mean, you'd have to paint it purple, for real. I've never even seen a purple Jeep. And as we went to get my red Jeep that I already had the check cut for, we passed the purple Jeep. We go inside. I say, I need to know how much that purple Jeep is. He said, who is it for? I said, it's for me. My mom says, she has AIDS, she's dying. Can you knock some money off? He says, oh my God, my partner has AIDS. I've been with him for 20 years. Sure. Sign the papers, drive my purple Jeep off the lot, drive it home to call my girlfriend's mom and let her know I got a purple Jeep. When you go see her today, tell her I got a purple Jeep. She died at 8:05 when I was signing the contract. Someone that's in here tonight bought that purple Jeep for me years later because it was really hard for me to give up. That's a burning bush. I can't explain it. The day I got diagnosed with AIDS was 12 years ago today. April 7th, 1994. Right? Didn't get that whole warning system. You have HIV, you might get AIDS one day. just sick, and they were like, ah, she's a white girl. She didn't shoot dope but one time when she was 16. She ain't got that. Let's tell her she's got something else. 8 times. So by the time they found out it was really AIDS, I was like, really had AIDS. And I remember calling all my sponsees and saying, y'all gotta come to home group. Friday night home group at Serenity Lodge in Chesapeake, Virginia. Serenity Lodge, woo-hoo. Anybody remember that place? And I tell them all they need a new sponsor. I'm going to die. The doctor gave me 90 days to live. I lost half my hair. They thought I was smoking crack anyways. That's what they were calling it by then. And I remember in the meeting, I was bitching about all the people that worked for me with my bootleg t-shirt business, you know, that illegal part of me that I couldn't get right yet. Bitching how nobody showed up to work on time and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm tired and sick and blah, blah, blah. And this little girl comes up to me after the meeting weighing all of like 85 pounds. Crystal meth can mess you up, people. And she comes up to me afterwards. She goes, well, I need a job. And I was like, well, here's the damn address. Show up, right? And I gave her the address. She goes, I need a sponsor, too. And I was like, okay, well, I sponsor those women over there that are crying. Go get one of them. And she said, no, you know, just this new look. She had 17 days clean, y'all. She just celebrated 13 years Monday. Let me tell you what a newcomer can do for you. Got out of treatment that morning. She looked at her clock and she said, no, I was thinking, like, if you found that out at 12 o'clock today and you haven't used, I need you for a sponsor. Now, let me tell y'all something. Since 12 o'clock noon, it had been all about me. I was dying. I just put $10,000 on a house. I want it back. I want to give it to my sisters. Who's going to take care of the t-shirt business? Where are my dogs going to go? Blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? And, oh, I didn't have the dog yet. That's right. I just had the house. The dog came next from that newcomer. But do you see what I'm saying? A newcomer took me out of my triangle of self-obsession and brought me back to reality, to recovery. Okay? A newcomer. The last story I'll share with you about my burning bush is probably the most significant experience of my life. I brought tissue. My oldest daughter is 5 1/2 years old, and almost 2 1/2 years ago, she was sexually assaulted at the age of 3. And when I tell you all I wanted to kill somebody, I wanted to kill somebody. Never lied to my husband. No, he ain't an addict. I don't tell him everything I did either. I'm not stupid. But I looked my husband dead in his face, and I said, I'm going to my home group. I'll be back. And, you know, we have a wing thing before the home group. And then I go to my meeting. And I live out in the country where there's cow shit and horses and all that stuff, wagons and everything. And if I take a right, I'm going to the right place. But y'all better know if I'm taking a left, I'm going the wrong place, because I was going left and I was going to kill me somebody. And I was going to end up in the prison that I've been in for years telling women how to get right, right? And in my rage, and I went out and I planned it now. This was premeditated. This was with my best knowledge, right? All by myself. All by myself. In my head. And I went under our deck and I got a 2x4 and a lead pipe and I put them in the back of my truck. My mommy SUV with the leather seats and the, you know, heated fanny. And I took a left out of my neighborhood. And I got to the top of the mountain and realized there was no music in the car. And I turned the button on, and there was a song playing, and many of you may know it, and this man was saying, I need you now. Not another second, not another minute. I need you now. And he was begging God to help him. And I just broke down crying and turned around. And by the time I got to my homework, I looked like a mess. I mean, my home group, I looked like a mess. And my home group members were like, you were going to kill somebody, weren't you? That's what happens when you tell your home group members the truth. They know you. And I said, yes, I was. I don't know how to explain those situations, and largely I don't want to. All I know is that if that can happen for me, if I can be at a place in my life where even in my most desperate moment, I am so connected to God because of all of the daily maintenance and work that I have done that I can have a reprieve from myself. Something's working in this program. Step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Spiritual principles, trust, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, surrender, and I love this one, hope, which translates into faith. You like that? Hope, which translates into faith. That's what it says. It says, our step working guide, it says, by working the third step, we are allowing someone or something to care for us, not control us or conduct our lives for us. I remember when I went to my sponsor and said, I don't get this God put you in my life thing that everybody says. And she said, well, ask yourself if it's true for you. Everything we hear around here isn't true for everybody. And all I could think of every time somebody said that, and I still visualize it today when people say it, is like somebody sitting up there and they like go, plop, and they like pluck you out and put you over there. And I'm like, I don't see God like that. You know what I'm saying? I have free will. If there's a beautiful and wonderful spiritual person in front of me, I have a choice. I'm either going to go to you because I feel like I want that, or I'm going to be rebellious and go the other way. God doesn't put or not put anyone in my life. If I believe that, then I believe God had my child sexually assaulted. Let me tell you something. There's a difference between God's will and man's will. Hurt person who hurt my child. So I don't see God as some puppeteer. I have free will. If I'm aligned with His will, I do a good job. When I'm not, everybody around me knows it. Normally, my husband first. But I just don't see it like that. And I'm glad I don't, because if that was the case, what would I ever celebrate or what would I ever be sad about? Because everything would be on His shoulders. I don't live like that today. My life is my responsibility. My recovery is my responsibility. It goes on to say, we are making a simple decision to change direction, to stop rebelling at the natural and logical flow of events in our lives, to stop wearing ourselves out by trying to make everything happen as if we were in charge of the world. I'm going to tell y'all something. It's tiring to live in constant conflict with reality. I did it for years. My effort was wasted. My energy was useless. The energy that I put now into trying to go with the flow is much better spent. Because of this third step. It also says surrendering our self-will doesn't mean we can't pursue goals or try to make changes in our lives and the world. It doesn't mean we have to passively accept injustices to ourselves or to people for whom we are responsible. When my daughter was hurt, you know what the law said? Sorry, there's no law against that. You like that? In Virginia, you can do that. A child, an older child, can do that to a younger child. And there's no law for that. You like that? Think I wasn't crazy then? Think I wasn't sitting in my senator's office? You know I was. But what that tells me is this. If I'm going to put it out to you like this. If you're a sexual predator, yeah, I'm going to keep hitting that one because it's killing people around here. If you're a sexual predator and I have multiple people call me that I don't even know sometimes and say this situation happened, and the person that is the predator is the same person over and over again. I ain't even from that area and don't know the people. Eventually, what I'm going to do is when they call me and say, you don't have to hug that person anymore. Stay away from that person. Please don't go near that person. Everyone here is not here to recover. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to sit there and not tell women how to protect themselves and not tell men how to protect themselves. Men are not the only sexual predators around here. If you think that's true, you're joking. You're fooling yourself. Women are highly capable of scooping a newcomer up and screwing them over. Highly capable. I did it, first of all. Hello. Don't miss my story. I've watched Fonzie's do it, and it killed me every step of the way. There's nothing I can do about it. It hurts. Our step working guide says, though the word decision sounds like something that takes place mostly in the mind, we need to do the work necessary to go beyond an intellectual understanding and internalize this choice. You know the tug of war we go through? Well, God, you know the situation ain't going so good. I'm going to give you this part, but I'm going to keep the other part. Because I think I'd really do something on there.
I just, you know, I don't even have that lie anymore. Largely, I can't do nothing. If I'm not doing God's will, I don't have any power. You know, unfortunately, there's a guy in the program that says the crappiest part about step three is like we ask you to turn your will and your life over, we don't tell you what you get. I mean, we know what we get in the 11th step, it says it. But in the third step, it doesn't say nothing. It says just do it. We don't know what you're going to get. We don't even tell you what you're going to get. Just do it. You know, but that's what it means to me. It says we may deal with frustrations more gracefully. When I went through this situation with my daughter, I went to court 7 times last year. Is it a wonder that I had shingles 7 times last year? I was stressed. Largely because every time I went as a hurt mom instead of a powerful woman. I screwed myself and my child over changes in her life because I couldn't get past the pain and wanting to kill him. And I ain't talking about just mess around and kill him. I wanted to kill him. I wanted to, like, gut him and show him his heart while it was still beating. You know how shameful it is to have umpteen years in recovery and have to go in your home group and say, I want to run him over with a lawnmower and see him shoot out the back? That's humiliating, but it's where I was at. I used to pray he would die every day on the way to work because I thought she would be relieved if he did. And the truth is the highest thing I could do is pray for him to heal so he can be there for her and grow up. That's what a big girl does. And you know what? Eventually, that's what I had to do. I had a sponsee not too long ago tell me something. I'll tell you, it was one of the greatest compliments I've ever had. She said, you know what? I don't know what I thought about this process. She said, but I know that I have believed all my life that nobody could change. My life tells me nobody changes, really. And I watched you change. Do you see what I'm saying? A person who's capable of murder didn't hurt anybody. And not only that, I prayed for him. And after I wrote the prayer, I realized that prayer should have been written for me. The decision that we make by working this step and the relationship that results will revolutionize our existence. You mean that I will work the third step and I will have a transformation like never before? I'll tell you what, I'll guarantee it. Narcotics Anonymous doesn't have to. I'll guarantee it. I guarantee if you work a third step thoroughly and you practice those spiritual principles for the third step, that you will have a transformation inside. Nothing might change on the outside, but inside you'll feel differently. I know it because I lived it. Here's the kicker about the third step, and it says it in our literature, and it works down by, this is a 12-step program, not a 3-step program. The decision that we made in the third step is perhaps the most momentous decision we will ever make in our lives, but we need to work the rest of the steps for it to remain meaningful. There is more work to do. We have found that the spiritual path set forth in the 12 steps is the only way to recover in Narcotics Anonymous. Not one way, the only way. It's the only way to the freedom that I want. And I know that today. Step 4. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And the spiritual principles are honesty and courage. Largely what I think about step 4 is like this. I got a sponsor who had been shot and all that stuff. And so largely I like talk about all that stuff. But then I got a sponsor who seemed like really frou-frou and superwomanish, and I glorified everything I ever did right and forgot about some wrong things. And then I told the truth. And then I grew. And I know today that the fourth step is an avenue to freedom. It says it in our literature. It's why I stay here. It says the fourth step provides us with the initial insight we need to grow. Whether we are writing our first inventory or our 20th, we are starting a process that takes us from the confusion to clarity, from resentment to forgiveness, from spiritual confinement to spiritual freedom. We can turn this to this process again and again. When we are confused, when we are angry, when we have problems that don't seem to disappear, an inventory is a good way to take stock of just where we stand in the path of recovery. Spiritual confinement to spiritual freedom. I didn't even know that's what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for nothing when I came here. I was largely looking like to save my job. But look what I found. Step 5. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Trust, courage, self-honesty, commitment, self-acceptance, and humility. As a sponsee, it's my job to tell you the truth. I'm not afraid of anything anymore. I don't give a damn what I find out about myself. I just don't care. It's never killed me. What I didn't tell you almost did. So I'm not afraid to tell you the truth now. If you think it was too much information and you do the TMI, screw you. I gotta say it. That's just where I'm at. I need to tell the truth. As a sponsor, I have to discern the best path for you. Some newcomers can, like, do the 4-step all in one fair swoop the first time. Some need to do it in sections, like childhood and teenage shit and then adult stuff. You know, I can't make it be the same for everybody. I have to be responsible to you and figure out what you need. Then I need to take notes when you tell me your story, because I can't remember your story, because there's like 6 of you and 1 of me. And when I take notes, I can help you find your patterns, and that's my job. And it actually says that in our literature, that we take notes as sponsors in the 5th step. Step 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Spiritual principles, commitment, perseverance, willingness, faith, self-acceptance, trust. Even if we're not consciously aware of it, check this out. Even if we sleep just fine at night, the result of acting on a defect when we have the ability not to is an impairment of our spiritual growth. If we continue being unwilling, we will eventually paralyze our spiritual growth. I don't want that. I'm not even willing to roll those dice today. And it works out in why it tells us things like, when the pain of remaining the same becomes greater than our fear of change, we will surely let go. Part of the process of becoming entirely ready involves practicing constructive behavior. Hello, our behavior does matter around here. We were on our way over here from the Ramada Inn earlier this afternoon, and there was a couple of women with all the stuff on, the t-shirt and the little tag and all of it, and said the F word so many times. And I'm a truck driving mouth girl around people I know I can do it with. If I'm in my car, if I'm in my hotel room, if I'm around people that I just want to free myself like that, because my husband doesn't cuss and my children surely don't cuss, I can do it. I can hang with the best of you. But you got Narcotics Anonymous garb on, and you said the F word like 50 times on the way over here, out loud in public. It's embarrassing. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm in here trying to free myself of the pain I have had all of my life, and I'm embarrassed sometimes. I've been to a convention once, and when the lights came on, there was more trash on the floor than in the trash cans, and the dance started 2.5 hours late because it took us that long to clean the room up. That's embarrassing. Let me get off my little soapbox. If any reservations exist, if we feel the need to cling to any defect, we pray for willingness. I don't have any excuses anymore. If I have one, I just have to put it out there. If I have something I'm unwilling to work with, I just have to say it out loud so I eventually become willing. Step 7, we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings, the spiritual principles, trust, faith, and patience. Patience, patience, patience. Humility and surrender on a deeper level. All right, so at this point on my 7th step, I'm largely in the place where prayer is about the best action I can take, because I cannot will myself into any change. Prayer is the part where I not only open my mind, but if I don't have an open mind, there's no chance for my heart to open. If there's no chance for my heart to open, there's no chance for a change. God cannot come in on a closed heart, not on me. If I say the words, I'm ready, but I say the words inside, I'm not, nothing's going to happen. Everything's going to stay the same. When I come to you and you're my wife and I say I need a new perspective, you better bet I'm ready. Don't ask me if I'm sure if I need a new perspective. I'm telling you I need a new perspective. Don't doubt me. I'm ready. This is a spiritual choice, a choice that goes beyond any emotional reaction or a conscious act of will. This is the chance to change in step 7. It's a chance to change. I never even, the concept eluded me all my life, and I can't believe that I actually have. Step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Spiritual principles, honesty, courage, willingness, compassion. Look, when I first did my first 8-step, my sponsor said, go make a list. I want you to make a list of all the people that screwed you over, and I want you to make a list of all the people you screwed over. I said, okay, cool, I like that. I didn't quite understand it, but I liked it, because I got to just rage on a few more people. And of course, you know that list of like what was done to me was like 15 times longer than the what I did to others list. And so I came to her and I said, okay, and we got ready to do our work. And she said, okay, which one's which? And I said, well, this is the one where the people did everything to me, and this is the one where I did everything to every people. So she grabbed that one and dropped it in the trash can next door. She said, now let's get down to business. And I was devastated because that took a lot of work. But she taught me a lesson. It's about me, not about them. It says, and it works how and why, except from the harm we've caused, being truly sorry and become willing to go to any lengths to change is a painful process. But we need not to fear our growing pains, for acknowledgement of these truths helps us continue our spiritual awakening. Simply accepting the harm we caused increases our humility. Being truly sorry is a clear indication that our self-centeredness has diminished. Willing to go to any lengths to change, we are newly inspired. And I was, and I have been every time I've done the 8-step. We get to 9. And I don't know where the hell it is. Oh, sorry, guys. I'm not always completely prepared here. In step 9, it says, we may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I'm others. If I sold you your first tin of crack and I did that thing like, you know, sell you a 20 for 50 and give you a 10 for free, so you keep coming back, and then you were left in a crack house and you died the first hit you took, and so the rest of the weekend you were raped and sodomized while you were dead and your body was dragged off to the woods, my sponsor told me it's a good idea not to go back to her parents and tell them that I did that. That what I need to do is go somewhere and help save as many people as I can. You know, the guilt that I've lived through over that was absolutely unbearable at times. But the truth is that I've gone into prisons and I've been in NA for a long time and I have tried to right that wrong by the way that I live. You know, the 9th step also tells me that I don't get to look at what you did wrong. You know, and I'd like to because I want to tell my mom, look, you screwed me over. I need you to say I'm sorry. But the 9th step tells me I don't get to do that. Step 10, we continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. The spiritual principles are all the ones we've previously learned. But the ones we focus on are self-discipline, honesty, and integrity. Look, the questions are in the book. You look at them at a daily basis. By this point in the process, if you can lay your head on your bed at night and you haven't thought about your behavior, you know, something, you missed something. Because I can't. I'm incapable of laying my head down at night without second-guessing what I've done all day, and not in an unhealthy way, in a very healthy way, to make sure I'm on the right path. Step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Commitment, humility, courage, and faith. I told you before, when I'm not doing God's will, I'm fighting, struggling, drowning. Everybody knows it around me. It's apparent in the way that I behave and speak, in my tone, in my voice. And when I am doing God's will, I got all the power in the world. And I know that today. My purpose while trying to recover on a daily basis is to allow divinity to enter all areas of my life. Not like the ones I choose, not the easy ones, but my kids and my husband. And there's a story in the NA Way magazine in July of 1999. And it talks about us being spiritual beings having a human experience. And that's exactly what I want to believe today. Because of my internal bondage and the changes that I've had to face, I have to remain diligent. And I'll never be done until I'm dead. And that's the way I see the 11th step. You know, if I'm not diligent and saying every morning, like, just let me behave the way I'm supposed to. And that's not a right or wrong thing. That's a feeling right or feeling wrong thing inside of me. It's not a judgment call. It's I know before, during, and after I'm going to be an asshole. It isn't a surprise. It doesn't sneak up. You know? Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Unconditional love. Look, I ain't capable. You screw with one of my kids, I ain't got unconditional nothing for you. I'm human. The fellowship is unconditional. I'm not. I'm human. I try to be unconditional with the women that I work with, but largely I'm like not there. I don't know what that says about me, and I'm figure that out later. Selflessness. I want more of that. I love it. Being selfless is awesome. And the truth is that when I'm trying to be selfless, I'm still selfish because it feels good. I don't even know what to think about that. But the last one is steadfastness. Look, I'm not here because it's fun. I'm not here because I have a good time. I'm not here because of any of that. I am here because I grew up under a man beating me so bad that he broke bones and everything else. And in my head, he put a sign in there that said, "You will never be enough, no matter what." And I'm free from that today. That's why I said, I want freedom from every single negative thought that has ever come through my head and told me to make a wrong decision. And I pray tonight that no matter what, you know, that somebody actually felt what I said instead of heard it. Thanks for letting me share.